Hello and welcome to the Brew and Byte Show, sponsored by the London Mac User Group. This is episode 12, the Sonic Screwdriver and the Three-Cornered iPad. I'm Craig and today we're joined by our wonderful panel as well as a very special guest. But before we break into this week's topic, let's say hello to the panel. Tina, hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Enjoying the almost spring-like weather. I've actually gardened for a bit, so if I suddenly make a creaking noise, it's because my legs don't work anymore.
That doesn't sound good for someone that's just had a knee operation either.
It was interesting. But I am walking about, so that's good.
And next up, we'll say hello to Alistair. How are you this evening?
I'm good, Craig. Slowly just catching up on various bits of Apple news, but I'm good.
That's always good to hear. And next up, we have Martin. How are you?
Hi, good evening, Craig. Everyone, yeah, I'm fine. I'm in good spirits. I've just got my vaccination date for early next week, so that means I can get out and about a bit. Hopefully, in the next few weeks, and you know, it's been a long 10 months. So yeah, so we're in a really good space tonight.
Most importantly, this evening we're joined by a very, very special guest. Where do we start with his list of accolades? We've got public speaker, writer, YouTuber, and deputy chair of the Writers Guild, as well as being a Mac expert. Let's say hello to William Gallagher. Hello, how are you?
Well, live up to all that now. Thank you for that. But you said this is episode 12. Doesn't that mean you've said everything now? It's all done. Are we going to talk about Windows or something today?
Joining the dark side.
No, you know us, William. With 12 episodes, we can talk about the one set of earpods for another 12 episodes. You know what Apple users are like.
Doesn't sound like me at all, no.
So first up, should we jump into the news this week? So first of all, there's been lots of news in regards to iOS 14.5's beta. I don't know if any of you have come across some information on that. Or have any points you want to get across?
I'm so looking forward to the shortcut stuff. I'm trying not to just leap on betas every time, but the shortcuts additions are really tempting.
Well, I just realised I've got a spare iPhone 10 now. My primary is a 12. So I might very well go onto the beta testing system and put it onto that and see how it runs. So I'll be able to talk about these things instead of just sitting here twiddling my thumb thinking, I don't know anything about this one. Yeah, no, the point I was trying to make, though, is, as they've said many times, it's not good to use, you know, the beta testing on your primary machine. If that's the only phone or iPad or Mac you've got, you're running a bit of a risk if you go to the betas. If you've got a spare machine, then yeah, it's a worthwhile exercise.
That's true. I don't know if any of you also saw, you receive any notifications about Apple Maps this week. I actually got a notification to say that there'd been some updates and they've now enabled lots more for people that cycle. So you've now got information regarding cycle paths, how if you want to go on a direct route or a leisurely cycle, or if it's a hilly area, it will actually notify you and you can choose the route based on those parameters. That was something that's been added.
As a non-cyclist, that sounds exhausting, but I'm sure it's really good.
The thing that I've noticed in Maps is that my app of preference for travel is I use TomTom primarily because they have got warnings about speed cameras. Not that I speed, of course, but I want to make sure that the person in front of me suddenly doesn't jam on their brakes, causing me a problem. So I always use TomTom just to make sure that I'm aware of the speed cameras and where they are. And that was never available in Maps before, but now all of a sudden you get warnings about speed cameras. I don't know whether that's only just coming because I said I don't normally use Maps when I'm traveling. Yeah, so I don't know, is that a recent thing that's been added? Or
according to some of the breakdowns that people have come across on YouTube playing with the beta, is that that is actually an available function now. It seems to also work well if you've got CarPlay in your car. Siri will actually announce that you're coming up to a speed camera.
Yes, it made me jump through the roof. On one of the few times I've driven anywhere in the last 6 months, suddenly this voice came out and I swerved.
The interesting thing about it is if you are being a good citizen, of course, and approaching in the appropriate speed, it will warn you that there is a speed camera. If you are inadvertently going over the speed, it will tell you to watch your speed. So it knows what you're up to. Big brother or Big Apple is watching you. Be careful.
So Google have had this feature for a number of years. So one of the features that you'd come across is if you were going from a 30 zone to a 20 zone, it would warn you ahead of time saying you are now approaching a 20 zone road, and it would flash up the new 20 on the maps. And it would show you that, you know, your current speed, and it would go red to sort of highlight you've now moved zones. And it's quite useful on Google Maps, especially if you were driving at night, because you could have it put a mode on it and it would flip the opposite way around, so you could then see it on your windscreen.
Google Maps always sounds so good. And there was one time when I drove somewhere and Apple Maps took me to totally the wrong place. And I thought, right, that is it. I'm in the car. Forget Apple Maps. Got up Google Maps. And I couldn't find the button that said, okay, yes, go, tell me. It was like stabbing at everything, but it finally let me through. And it took me to the wrong place as well. So I just gave up on Google Maps and went back to Apple Maps. And Apple Maps is great at last, most of the time.
Some of the other interesting things that they've added was that you'll be pleased to know, for those that use Spotify, it can now be set as the default music player on the iPhone, which was only available on the HomePod up until recently. I don't know how many of you use Spotify.
No, not yet.
Personally, I'm an Apple Music subscriber, but Spotify is extremely successful and has a growing listener base. Does Spotify offer more?
It's a very similar library. I imagine the services are actually pretty much the same. It's just whichever one you got to first. But am I wrong? Is there something more appealing?
It might be also that Spotify in certain countries has permission to play songs which Apple Music doesn't, because some of the record studios have made sure that Apple have certain particular tracks, Spotify have others, and Tidal have pretty much most of the stuff by the independents. And it's all to do with license agreements. And so if you are following a particular group or a particular artist, which Spotify may have endorsed or may be giving more money to, then that might be useful. The only one I use apart from Apple iTunes, I don't have Apple Music, is Tidal, because I got a free subscription on it. And that seems quite good because they give more money back to the artists.
I think there was a lot of discussion, wasn't there, about Apple Music and even Spotify, because I think for a long while, certain big artists like Taylor Swift, I believe, refused to stream because she wasn't happy with how much they wanted to pay her.
And she's recently had to record all her music again because the guy who owns her tracks will not release it. And so she's now asked to re-record it. Isn't that right, Craig?
Yes, it is. I think she's actually going through her entire music catalogue, re-recording each song over a licensing issue.
Suzanne Vega did the same thing, acoustic version, she called it, but it was purely to get back recordings that she could own. And that was really pre-streaming, so licensing just gets everywhere. I had believed that the last figures I saw said that Apple was paying more than most people, but it's by like a fraction of a pixel of a part of a penny per billion plays or something. So music is in trouble, even as we get to enjoy so much of it.
I still find it, I think hilarious is the word, the idea that the Beatles for a long while wasn't on Apple Music because of a disagreement of use of the word Apple.
Yes, Apple Core, exactly, yes.
Oh, that goes back to the very early days, doesn't it? I think that when the first battle between Apple, was it Apple Corp and Apple Inc?
Yes.
The first battle of the apples. They came to an agreement on that, and then is it 72? They had another round, another slice. Sorry for the pun. They finally came to an agreement, I think in the late 80s, early 90s, when Jobs started to think about the iTunes store. And I think they finally came to an agreement then so they could come onto iTunes, which they do now. But yeah, unfortunately, it's all down to money as usual. A lot of the artists were hoping that the newfangled internet would enable them to stream directly to people buying it like you and me, and they would get all the money. And they take away the power from the record labels. Unfortunately, they got caught out then by the iPod and the iTunes store. And unfortunately, I think that gave the power back to the corporate giants in the music world again. And they seem to be now ruling the roost again and making all the money for the non-artists, the non-performers.
Although I would say that the iPod was the one that saved record industries, because up until then, you ended up with the record industries trying to ban MP3, the record industries banning Napster, and wanting to stop any form of electronic playing of music except for radio broadcasts. And they were going very heavily at it to such an extent that the guy who owned Napster had a 15-year ban on being able to start up any record labels. And Apple came to an agreement and said, right, we'll put the music on there. And they had so much power that when they came to set up Apple Music, Apple had an agreement whereby any music which you had sourced from anywhere, which you uploaded to the cloud, they would then let you download a cleaner version for free, because that was the thank you from the record industry to say, thank you for actually providing a solid and stable system for us to actually work. Because Apple said, people don't want to rip the music because they want to be pirates. They want to rip the music because they just want the music. And that allowed YouTube to come online and Spotify.
But also the other issue is about fairness, because people were saying, well, if I bought a CD, technically you're only meant to have it in the form of a CD. It's a very grey area. Whereas most people think, well, if I've got the CD, I've bought the right to play that music, and I want to play it on all my devices. When I was a teacher, what was interesting is students used to laugh at me because they were asking about music, and I said, no, everything I've got is legit. And they thought that was hilarious, because actually they're used to free music.
I think one of the strange things was, I remember listening to this argument last year, and one of the big record labels, one of the executives said that, oh, it's okay, the artists can make all their money from live performances and gigs. So that's had a massive effect. And I think you're right there too, that I don't think the record industry had any idea what digital music was going to be. And I think they gave the rights to Apple. I think that's why the film industry and the TV industry kept them all at arm's length to retain control of the product and the money. I think they were shocked at the profits that Apple made from music.
I think the next big battleground will be things like videos. I'm stunned at some of the stuff that you can find on YouTube.
From the Writers Guild point of view, seeing writers' work out there and not being paid for, it's horrendous. On the other hand, there are things out there that are just never being seen otherwise. It's a ridiculously fine line for it. But yeah, we're constantly campaigning for writers' rights. That business about giving Apple the rights, so Apple had that, we forget this, Apple had that advantage that it was really small at the time. And the record labels basically thought, yeah, whatever. And it's like a testing ground. But
who's going to buy it, spend £350 on a small device to play 1,000 songs? Give Josh what he wants. We don't think it's a problem. We'll control it. And they learn to their cost. And unfortunately now, as I said, it's gone the other way. They've now clawed all that control back by really hammering down on the artists and making sure they're not getting their fair share really of what you would have thought the money you're spending.
I had a very different spin to this. So I've worked recently a lot as a photographer with different actors and actresses. Something that they've been using to obviously provide an income, because all the theatres are closed, was to do private or live performances over Zoom, in which people pay for the link. So they're actually getting a direct income that way.
I mentioned Suzanne Vega a moment ago. She did a live concert and sent some of the revenues, sold tickets, did it live online, but sent the money out to the concert hall she would have been going to on the tour. And I thought that was just marvellous, sharing it.
No, so there is some money to be made out there. Fingers crossed we'll be back to normal sooner rather than later.
I think, though, there will be still markets for people that would be interested in, I'll go with Suzanne Vega, an amazing singer. So if you knew that you were going to be watching her do a live performance, okay, it would be better to see her in person. But, you know, we live in London. We've got lots of places that big artists would use. But what if you don't? So for some people, actually, internet concerts could be really convenient. So I think there'll be things left after COVID is gone. There'll be things that people now do without thinking about.
I'm going to say, I think we have to look at not just music, but everything in life. There's going to be stuff BZ before Zoom and then after Zoom. I think everyone will work, play, entertainment. Everything is going to change, I think, dramatically with how the perception of technology, people thinking, it's almost become like, I'm going to Google it. You say, I'm going to Zoom it now, don't you? The Zoom has become the verb that you're talking about, having a chat or a conference or with a colleague, a friend, even a relative.
What's also interesting is you notice that no one has said, I want to have a Skype conversation with, but yet Skype was the dominant platform for a number of years. And I've only used Skype now to phone people's landlines in different countries.
No, as I said, I think Zoom has become the biro of our age.
Shall we move on to the subject of LastPass? I'm sure some of you have received a notification or an email this week or have seen it via many social media platforms that LastPass is actually starting to restrict some of its services based on the type of device that you use. I don't know how many of you use LastPass. That's a good question. I certainly do. And I'm sure Alistair has an opinion on this one too.
So I've been a member of LastPass since pretty much it started. So that was before LogMeIn bought it, when it was just a team of about four guys. And I was listening on a podcast called Security Now. They brought the guy in who was the chief technology officer to explain the science and the technology behind it and why to trust it. And then they had a challenge to see if you could break into it. And I love LastPass because I could then transfer all my passwords onto the password manager and then be able to access it off my iPhone, my Android phone at the time, my Mac or my PC, because being IT engineer, I have to sort of flip between all different devices. And I thought it was excellent because it's the same format and it was very easy. And then as soon as you're logged into one, it would lock you out of the other. Slightly concerned that it's going to one device only, because that would mean that a lot of people will stop using it. It's the curse of the defaults or whatever they have beforehand. And we keep seeing on security now that don't store your passwords inside the browser in case anything gets inside your browser and wants to suck out all the passwords. The question is, why are they trying to push you away from LastPass and onto another system? I know it's a capitalist idea. You always have to make money from it. Why now? Why the end of the financial year? It's an odd timing. That's all I can say.
I'm going to throw a spanner in the works for this one. So yes, I use LastPass and very much a happy customer. But do I want to pay? I don't know. At this point, I don't think so. So that's going to be an interesting relationship because I have to switch between many different devices. I also have a qualm with them in that I used to be a LogMeIn customer and loved that. And yet again, they were bought by LogMeIn and all of a sudden it became a paywall situation. And something resonated with me. I had to look it up. I'm sure some of you may be familiar with Troy Hunt. He is the man that created Have I Been Pwned? One of the original tweets that he made was that LastPass has been bought. It will be free forever. I don't think so.
I cannot tell you how much I seethed over LogMeIn, because I paid the extra to get a lifetime license, and then they decided my lifetime was a lot shorter than I thought it was. And yeah, very annoyed. I honestly didn't realise they'd bought LastPass, because I'm a happy 1Password customer and didn't need to know. Lurking over here. Well, I'm not going to go to LastPass now. You pay more, and it's owned by people that I don't trust. But yeah, I'm fine. I'm staying here. Do any of you use the Bitwarden that I've been hearing about a lot this week? Apparently a free password manager, but it totally passed me by until the LastPass news broke.
That's a good point. I've heard of it, but I've never used it. It has got quite a big following, I think, too.
I'm not a user of any of these systems. I rely on Keychain Access and my own system. I can remember easily and are pretty strong. So I've never felt I had to use LastPass or 1Password or anything like that. It really teased me off when people say, right, you're buying this forever, or there should be some commitment made that when you're buying something up, if commitments or guarantees or whatever, you should honour them. But
I was going to comment more on the idea of you value a company that can be, I wouldn't use the word leveraged, but used occasionally. And my example is Flickr, because actually I was one of the people that got an email from Smugbug saying, we will try and keep Flickr going, but I'll be honest, we need money. We're not going to stop it being free, but if you value it as a service, please would you buy a professional level? And it was, I don't know, 20 quid, 25 quid. It wasn't a massive amount, and it was really upfront. And actually, as a Flickr user, not a massive Flickr user, I appreciated the idea that they were honest and said, this is the score. We need this many people to keep going. We're going to give it our best shot to keep it going, but we're not going to do it. And they bought my goodwill, and therefore they got my money when I didn't need to give money. Whereas if you've bought something or been promised something and then they fail to deliver, well, those are the sort of companies when you'll be thinking, well, actually, no, you don't have my customer anymore, because I trusted you and you've abused that trust. So I'm glad I've never used Log Me In.
I think we all understand how difficult it is for developers. I mean, it's software. Who'd be a software developer now? And thank goodness there are people doing what they do. So I'm more than happy to pay for things. But having paid and then having it reneged on, that I'd forgotten how much that had hurt until you've raised it back up again. And I've been seething for the last few minutes. It's really got into me.
I think the comedy side of it was within about an hour, 45 minutes of them announcing that, I got an email from 1Password saying, oh, we're doing a promotional discount. So now it's almost like a pricing war on password security at the moment. I think I've got an email from each of them, and I think it comes down to a difference of 20 pence on which one. I have a weird suggestion for this one. Okay, so I have an iPhone and an iPad, and then I use a Mac. So with their new rules, I'm restricted. What if I had an account separate on both machines, but had the same passwords stored in different vaults?
You'd have to remember when you changed one on one to change it on the other, but you could, yes.
Shall we move on to the subject from the dark side, which is Microsoft Office? This is an Apple podcast. Do we dare speak about something from Microsoft?
As a user, I exist in an Apple world. All my kit is Apple. For me, it just works. I use Pages, I use Numbers, I use Keynote. But unfortunately, we do live in a Windows world. So yes, I have got Office 365 because I have to integrate with clients. And that's all they use. And although, yes, I can take in an Excel spreadsheet and transform it into numbers and work on it, I still have to export it out. And there is still a little bit of a difference there. Some of the features in Excel don't transport across exactly right to numbers and vice versa when you're sending it back. So yes, I have to live in a Word world. So I use these products as sparingly as possible.
I feel disloyal now because I came from the Windows world, and this is my job at my school using Office. I've never used Pages. I just don't, because everything I've worked with, I've used Office. So I've continued to use Office more because it was easy to transfer. You know, I could do a file. I didn't have to think about what format I saved it in. I could open it on a Windows machine or a Mac, and it didn't matter. So it'll be interesting now, because actually I don't need to do that anymore, but it's habit.
I think the issue, and William, you'll take this up on me now in a second, I'm sure, but I think I use maybe 5% of the ability of Word. You know, I type out, make out simple letters, simple reports, a few draft reports and things. I'm not writing a novel. I'm not writing huge, like, complex reports with multiple references and cross references. For me, I'm a fairly, I think, a basic user. So Word and, as I said, I use Pages do for me what I need, but that wouldn't apply to everyone by all means.
Word is still believes we print things out. So it's giant majority of it are the features for saying it's on page 7 and then you change another page and it'll move automatically. Really clever stuff. But all of my stuff goes online or through a publisher now. So none of that matters to me. And I remember many years ago, I used to really enjoy using Word. And there's a document you can still find online called Bend Word to Your Will, which gets around all of the ridiculous, convoluted bugs, actually, and helps you find ways to do things. And I relished doing that until one day I just thought, I just want to write. And so I got rid of Word, went on to Pages and carried on there. I do actually like Word on the iPad. And the reason we're talking about it now is that there's Office has become one app instead of separate Word, Excel and PowerPoint. My question about all this is why? The unified app. I would imagine most people concentrate on one app. Writers will use Word and maybe a bit of Excel, but there aren't going to be many people who use Word, Excel and PowerPoint a lot. So you've saved me having to press on a different app on my home screen, but you've made me press a different button inside Office before I can start doing what I do. And I don't see the benefit of it, really, but
I think it's like we've said so many times, one thing that comes across in all these podcasts is it's what it does for you. what does you want as a user to get out of anything, a piece of kit, an application or whatever? And you shouldn't really be swayed off in the fact that, okay, Pages may not be able to repaginate 246 pages into a simple format. How often do you use that function? I don't. As I said, I know what my limitations are word-wise, and I'm not a very good wordsmith. So I want something simple. I try and keep it brief. So as I said, it's for me, it's simplicity. It works. The thing I like about Pages, Tina, the one difference with Word, is that you can actually use it as a layout tool. You can make, you know, very easy posters, and if I need to drop in a little diagram about something I'm talking about, I find it much easier to do in Pages than I ever did in Word. That I found difficult to do. But then I said, I'm not experienced, and I'm sure a Word person will say, no, it's, you do this bit, but it'll be done in 5 seconds. But it was always a problem for me actually trying to, as I said, if I'm referring back to a picture I might have taken on site on a project or something like that, I just found Pages so much easier to do, and then turn it into a PDF, boom, away it goes, easy.
So the thing which I find interesting is that I came from the era of used typewriters, and then you go from typewriters to Acorn computers, and WordPerfect being the default program. The nasty thing with WordPerfect is it had this thing called overtype. So if you wanted to go back and edit something, you would type over what you were doing. And then you had to find a little command which would turn off overtype. And you can still buy a license of WordPerfect today because IBM still produce it. And the amount of clients I meet who still say, what was wrong with WordPerfect? The story I was told was the reason Microsoft had to go down the add extra features route was because Perfect owned all the patents to have a very simplistic type. And so Apple employed Microsoft back in the 80s to make them a little writing program. So there was WordStar and a few others. And Microsoft then ported the Apple license over to Windows. And so when people say, does Word work for Mac? Well, I say it was always invented for Mac, and then it was ported over to Windows, because when Microsoft bought some of the patents of IBM, they were able to do things. The idea of Word was not to be a replacement for WordPerfect. It was just meant to be a simple word typing program for students. This is what its original concept was, and for artists, because the Mac had a very small share of the market in those days. Then IBM dropped out of the market, and you can't find it, and Lotus Notes is just retired last year. So the question you should really ask yourself is, do we really want to have text edit, really simple program which just writes, or do we need to have a fully blown office system? And the thing I've discovered is the more complicated you make it, the more your clients and your students go, I can't use it, or I feel that I'm not using its full capacity. And remember what Steve Jobs said about why he designed Pages? He designed Pages primarily for the housewife who didn't want a really complicated system, because they said the vast majority of people who use Excel was using it for a recording as a list. They weren't using it to make mathematical formulas. It was used to just called lists for simple things like a football team or something simple like that. So I think in a way, Microsoft have gone back to simplicity.
Do you think that they've brought it all into one app to try and break down the confusion of versions of different offices? Office 360, Word, what's the reasoning to make it one app?
I don't know what the reasoning is, but it's, I think I'm with William. The apparent simplicity has actually created extra work, because, you know, there will be some people, lucky people, who will never need to write a PowerPoint. So why would you want to be in a position where you have to choose Word? It could be you only want to use Word. How many people do spreadsheets, you know? So you could have this unified app, and every time you open it, you then have to go Word. You've now got a choice when previously you didn't have a choice.
For the moment, at least, you can still just get Word or still just get Excel. But clearly, the plan must be to get rid of that and put us all through one. The Writers Guild uses Office. But if you're, as Deputy Chair, I'm in Birmingham, I'm not in the HQ in London. If you're outside of that, you can only use Office online. So I find I use Numbers and convert things over and put them in. But that did actually give me a license to use the Unified app when I was trying it out this week. And I stopped because I found opening it up, yes, it's Word again I want. I just went back to the way I used to do it. I've actually, so to this point about simplicity, though, I've had a lot of people tell me that Pages can't do something that I happen to know it can. And it seems to me that Pages hides things until you need them. And Microsoft says, no, you've got to know about this, you've got to learn that, got to do that, got to read this book about how to use it and stuff. But the perception is that Word does everything and Pages doesn't. And I think the version of Word on the iPad is actually really good because it slowly lost lots of things and is simpler to use. But
I think what I gave up on Word was that they kept changing all the menu bars. So where you got really familiar, you knew exactly which button to go to do something. You went to, oh God, where's that gone? And then you'd have to hunt through all the different menu bars they kept creating, this one, that one. And it got frustrating, and I thought, oh, I don't need this. And when I had the opportunity, at that point, I think Pages, I remember it used to be, was it iWorks that they first came out with? And that was a little bit poor. It wasn't maybe the greatest initiation. But like most things with Apple, they start off with something and they slowly build it into a very worthwhile app.
You've just made me flash back to working for BBC Worldwide. I was on Radio Times and they did Top Gear magazine, all this. And for a year, I was following a blog on Microsoft about the design of the then new ribbon and all of the studies and the tests. And it was fascinating until the last week when they revealed the final result. And I looked at it and I could not see how to open a file or save the one I've got. And I was wondering, when is the BBC going to adopt this? Months later, I walked in early one morning and the most polite editor you've ever met was on his feet swearing about, how do I open that?
Yeah, I think we've all been there. Where has that file gone? Yes, I could have been that man sometimes, William.
How many people go to their iPad or their iPhone to start a document, and how many people will write on their Mac to write a document?
Oh,
Mac, probably.
Mac.
Yeah, like you know I do these quizzes, guys. So yeah, I'll start the quiz on a Mac, but if I suddenly in the middle of the day come up with a challenge, a new question or section, I've got my phone with me, bang, I can straight into the phone, I can do it there, or if I've got the iPad or whatever. That's why I say I'm an Apple devotee. I've got all the bits of kit that I need.
That's really interesting. I've realised, as you say, it depends what I'm writing. There's a certain book I've been working on that in my head, it's in my iPad. It's really on all the devices, but I go to my iPad to work on that. And it's like more a psychological thing. Otherwise, I grab the nearest screen and write whatever's on there. Oh, I'm gonna start watching myself now to see what I go for first.
But my favourite go-to app for writing is Text Editor, or Simple Text as it used to be known, because the amount of times I will need to copy something from one document to another, or copy something from internet website like a support forum, and then paste it into a document, and then I'll dump it into Text Edit and then go make plain text, so I strip out all the formatting so I can then put it in, because often I'm having to send it on to students or I'm having to send it on to clients and I have to have it in a sort of no stupid formatting, because you know what will happen. If you paste it into Word, Word will start interpreting it and put its own formatting in, and it will end up in the dunder, or it will end up, you know, type 60 point and in blue or something. And it's infuriating. So that's why I find Text Edit brilliant, because you could just dump something in and strip it out, and it's a dumb, simple editor. And it goes back to where I started on, which was a typewriter.
Whereas I will use Word, but often I will get rid of all the formatting.
How many people, out of interest, use a writing program which is not one of the top three? So that's Word, Pages, or Text Edit.
That actually leads us nicely into the next subject. As some of us know, I shall let William do his introductory moment about his background and his career in writing.
What's your favourite writing tool?
How can you ask that? There's so many.
Okay, what is your preferred writing tool?
Oh, how can you ask that either? There's a little bit of me that misses the days when there was one writing, one WordPress assert that I would turn to for everything. And there was a patch a long time ago when it was WordPerfect, and then it had to be Word for various reasons. And there are reasons to not like that. And I know it's much better now. We have hundreds of tools. But I would like there to be one that I love enough that I turn to for everything. And I haven't got it. I write practically everything that's prose or nonfiction in Drafts 5 at the moment. I love Drafts on iOS. I'm not as enamored of it on the Mac, and I don't know why. If wish somebody could explain, it's the same keyboard on the same computer. There are words that appear, yet the feel of different apps is very strange. So Drafts is the current one and has been for about 2 years now, and I'm hardly using it, really. I use lots of actions on iOS, not on the Mac. But then if it's a screenplay, then Final Draft is my default choice. I have Scrivener, but I tend to use it most on the iPad. I'm trying to think, if I have one favorite writing app, it's probably Omni Outliner. And that really surprises me, because as a writer, I can't stand outlining. Omni Outliner is great for organizing ideas for it. So I will occasionally start an article if it's, I don't understand the article yet. So what are the questions I need to answer? And then what do I think is really important? And then it slowly grows into the article, or events. I've planned hundreds of events in it. So I have ended up using Omni Outliner. And my YouTube thing, 58 Keys, tends to go through Omni Outliner. And I truly don't know why, because it's a straightforward kind of script thing that could be done in anything. So there you go. Practically everything except Word. Let's call it that.
That leads on to, how have you become so popular on YouTube, and why? What is your background?
Okay, I'll tell you, because this is you and you'll understand this. I've never said this on the YouTube channel, but I'll tell you here. My YouTube thing is called 58 Keys. It is for writers who use Macs, iPhones and iPads. I think we've just crossed the 60th weekly episode, but I made 7 pilot versions before. And we will not speak of this again. But one of the biggest failings in it was I spent ages justifying why I was talking about Macs and things like this. Deputy chair of the Writers Guild to kind of say, you know, this is why I can talk about writing. I do scripts. I do Doctor Who radio dramas, so I can talk about scripts. I justified it all and explained it. And even I, watching those parts, would think, who cares? Just tell me something useful and I'll figure out if it's nonsense or go somewhere else. So I skip all of that. I just assume you're not interested in me. You are interested in Omni Outliner, in making ebooks, in finding screenwriting software, and just pile straight into that as fast as I can to get you as much detail. I'm a software addict. So being able to just enthuse about what things can and can't do, it works for me, and it seems to be working for a really remarkably steadily increasing number of viewers, which is just ace.
My question would be, why would you default away from something that's built into the OS? Or let's put it more simply, why would you pay for a writing app?
Because, I mean, as good as Pages is, I think Macs are remarkable for what they come with. But I'm currently writing a radio script in Pages, and I am regretting it. Something like, I think Final Draft is great for screenplays, it's rubbish for radio. So you're going to end up in some kind of word processor. Why not Pages? But for things, a lot of the formatted writing I do is incredibly formatted. Screenplays have to be in a really particular layout. And you understand that, you read thousands of them. But as you're writing down the dialogue, an argument between two characters, having to stop and reset the style or the margin or indent and remember, whereas with something like Final Draft, you type the name, you say the thing they're saying that's on their mind, hit return, it's the next character answering back. And it just keeps the flow of the conversation going. Things are much livelier when they're written in Final Draft than when you slog through in Pages or Word, even though I have set up so many keystrokes in Pages to make it zoom quickly between layouts and things. You don't have to move to any of these things, but when you have, you see that they're worth it. I could go on for an hour about Final Draft and another hour afterwards about what I don't like about Final Draft. So it's not that there are these panaceas out there.
Do you use one particular program for a particular type of writing? So for a screenplay or for a news article, do you chop and change?
Yes, just ridiculously. I mean, I actually haven't done much work today. I was out doing some fencing in my garden instead, but I would have used OmniOutliner drafts. Didn't go into Final Draft today, did go into Pages, and did go into Apple Notes. So I used four different word processor or text editor tools today on a day when I've been at my Mac for probably less than an hour. A normal day is 10 to 14 hours in front of this screen, and I will use at least half a dozen apps through that. I'm when you put it like that, I realize it's not a conscious thing. I reach for the app that feels right. Am I just mad? You're all more sane than I am.
No, I would agree with you on that one. I'm just looking at my doc at the moment. I've got Notes, Text Edits, Scrivener, Stickies. I used to have OmniOutliner. I have Words, Excel, PowerPoint, Teams. And the reason behind that is it depends on who it's for. So if I have to transfer text from my iOS devices to my Mac, I would copy and paste it into Notes and then take it off Notes and then paste it onto the Mac. And if I need quick thoughts, I dump it into Notes. Scrivener I was using because I was having to write a book for a client of mine who wanted to write a book about Mac, and they loved the way I was talking about it. But it was like you would have like 96 different subjects, all sort of small bits, and you know, I was having to sort of stick them together, and then I was having to jump backwards and forwards, and okay, that would be like page 4 and this would be page 6, and so I was having to jump backwards and forwards, and I found that Word couldn't do that, Pages couldn't do that, and I need something which I could sort of go, okay, that's interesting, but that would be this bit of the book, and this would be interesting, I stick that bit of that book. And I found Evernote was brilliant if I wanted to mix pictures with text, but then I got annoyed at their increasing of their subscription. But I found that was excellent, especially if I was trying to remember stuff, because I'm more visual orientated, so I like to have lots of pictures. And that's then I started finding I was using Keynote to work out ideas. So I'd start writing documents in Keynote with photographs, and then the photographs would then encourage me to write what I needed to do. So I would put together a presentation as if I was delivering it to someone, and that's how I'd write down my document. I'm dyslexic, so I don't always think in a sort of rational way. I think in a sort of slightly off-the-wall way, which is why I get complimented on my very high-end keynotes, because I'm a bit of a perfectionist. But I love to have very tight visuals. So.
I can't get over the fact you use Keynote, because I just interviewed Ken Case from the Omni Group. He created OmniOutliner, and he said that one of the reasons, a long time ago, he created it was he used to use the Outliner in whatever the predecessor of Keynote was, the one that Apple bought to make Keynote. It had an Outliner. He never makes presentations, but he did all his thinking in pre-Keynote. And that's fascinating that you're doing that with this. Excellent. I mean, ultimately, isn't it whatever works for you? Works for you, but you did say the dreaded word Evernote. I was such a fan.
See, now I loved Evernote, but I used it in a different way. I used to have, they did a subscription with a journal, so you could write in a journal with pen and paper. What are those? And you could take a picture of the page, and it used to import your notes. But I think I moved away from Evernote after they were one of the very first big internet hacks. I don't know if anybody remembers that. And lots of their customer data was leaked. It was one of the really big stories. And there was some odd comment from their CEO at the time saying, well, that's not my fault, kind of attitude towards it. So at that point, I waved Evernote goodbye, but I have never used it since. But I'm a big fan of drafts. I use drafts for literally everything. My favorite is all the add-ons that you can do bits and pieces with too.
I'd like to ask you about that, but with Evernote, I've got to get this off my chest because I paid for it to be a, did they call it a Premier or a Prime, whatever it was, that amongst other things, you got instant support. But my problem one day was it forgot I was a Prime user. It just dropped me back down for no reason. But because I suddenly wasn't a Prime one, they wouldn't respond to the requests. It took them a week to get back to me for it. And very shortly before that, they'd released an utterly pointless update, which went through every note you had and added some context links to it all, whether you wanted it or not. And I was going to an event. I had Evernote with all the details for it, and that update bricked Evernote on my iPhone on my way to the event on a Saturday morning when their support people were not on. They released a major thing when their support people were off for the weekend. And it's just massive things like that. In the end, when it came to the next time to pay for it, no, it's gone. I'll leave it.
It used to be the default program I used when I was on Android because I couldn't afford an iPhone in the, when I was first coming onto it. And so I could only afford one Apple device. So I had saved up to buy my first MacBook. Then, so what I was doing is I used Evernote as a basic text editor because on the original Android platform, there wasn't a decent writing program. So if I wanted to write notes when I was on the move, I would write it in Evernote and then edit it on the Mac. Because then I could sort of write something down quickly, take a picture of something to remind myself to do something, and then edit it on the Mac. And I started doing it. And then I discovered that you could have password protected files in Evernote. So if your phone got taken, you wouldn't lose the information. It also had a brilliant sort of photography recognition things. It said, it was, you could put tags on it. So you could say, what's in this photograph? Oh, this photograph is an Apple. This is a MacBook Pro 2015. And it was very helpful. So you could look for all the articles relating to something. But then I think the thing that really annoyed me was they started changing from their original concept and started charging too much, and it wasn't as good as it used to be on the devices.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? But
my question to you all, since I don't jump around like you do, how do you transfer files? How is it easy? Is it for one application to read files from another? Is there a set universal format, or do you have to do an awful lot of copy paste?
Well, I can tell you my answer is simple. I don't. If it starts in Pages, it stays in Pages. I mean, yes, I do a lot of copy and pasting, and I use a little utility called PopClip that lets me have quick access to a paste plane thing. But really, I write it and then I send it to someone, a publisher or a site or something like that. So I can't remember the last time I moved. No, that's not true. Moving from Omni Outliner to Pages, and I find that a real chore.
Yeah, that's one of the things that put me off. I did try Evernote and I've tried different ones. But it was always the fact that it was easy to come back to either Word or then Pages and just make it work. I suppose that's not really how you should be using it. But I found it easier to make Pages do what I want. Like you said, there's an awful lot in there that's not obvious. But you can, once you dig around and find it and go to YouTube, it's a great resource, stuff like that. I persevered and said, okay, I'm going to stick with Pages, make it work, and then I can transfer it to whatever I want, if it's going to go to a client or it's going to be published as a document and whatever. I don't want to keep having to learn new programs each time. I'm a lazy bugger and I tend to stick with what I know. I'm also getting too old to be keep changing around all these different programs as well anyway. So, sorry. Luddite.
I think this is a really important one that Martin should go away and watch some of William's videos, especially on drafts. Because I'm sure it would save him immense amount of time too. My reason for using drafts is that it's so well connected to so many other things. I use it for an obscure thing in that I schedule tweets with it, which
I have no idea how you do that. That's excellent. How do you do that?
So there is a plugin that says send a tweet, but what you can do is if you use Alfred, you can tell Alfred to open up drafts at a particular time, copy off of the preset clipboard and press send tweet.
Oh, I'm having
which saves me a lot of time, but also a lot of money for paying these third party management platforms for social media. You don't need to do that at all. It's all built in there. And I also like the fact that you can write a piece of text or a document and you can save it as a pages file, or you can save it as a Word document and then open it up again in one of those other programs.
I used to find it incredibly handy if I wrote, I have a blog on Friday mornings called Self Distract. I would write it on my iPhone in drafts, press a button, and it would be posted. It's just a WordPress thing. And, you know, it saved two steps, but it was a handy two steps it saved. But I broke it about 6 months ago, and I have no idea what changed, and I want it back. So I must focus on looking into it again. When I log in to do it manually, I have to go through all the capture stuff, and for some reason I really struggle with identifying characters and things, and this would just go through all of it. So I'm determined now I will fix it again and go back to it and use more. So thank you.
Because do you use any of the markdown facilities in drafts?
Yeah, I was kind of afraid you'd ask that. I think I might be the only person who doesn't like markdown. Sorry. There's a reason. Markdown is supposed to be easier to learn than HTML, and it is. Okay. But because I write a lot of journalism and non-fiction text, I use brackets in different ways. What's the best example? If I'm quoting somebody saying, "He will pay for this," you can't change the quote. You have to say what they've said, but it can be really unclear who he is. So you would open speech marks and then square brackets, "The vicar," close brackets, "will pay for this." The reader sees that, knows the person did not say "the vicar," but that's who they meant. So you're faithful to the quote, but you're also clear. You hit the square open bracket in any markdown editor and it starts trying to format things and change stuff. And I know, because you know what you're talking about, you're going to tell me, yes, you can use an escape character, but now suddenly the thing that's supposed to stop me having to learn anything requires me to learn escape characters. So I don't use it at all, I'm afraid. Clever, and I can admire it. But there was one editor, I can't remember the name now, it was a really gorgeous text editor that I thought, this is it, I'm having this one forever. But it required you to use Markdown. You couldn't get out of it. And I just, it broke everything I was trying to write. So it's gone. I'm bracing myself to be told off for this. Hit me with it.
I'm not holding anything against you on this one. The one thing that I would use Markdown for drafts is that when we post to our website, it's powered by WordPress. So a lot of the documents are written in drafts, and then Markdown picks up the different headers, lists, folder marks. But the most useful feature that I use is the links. So you can actually embed a link to a website to a particular word. That's the only main facility that I would use Markdown for. But I've seen some very clever things done with it. I know you mentioned the closed brackets and that the speech marks can be frustrating. But have you used TechSoap?
Yes, I love
it. Because I've heard a lot of people use that to remove the brackets for different documents.
Oh, no, I've never used it for that. I've used it, well, most often for smart quotes to dumb quotes and things. Oh, that's interesting. I actually use Keyboard Maestro I do a lot of writing with links in it. And what I will do is I will find the link, copy it, and then select the text that I want it to be a link, cut that with a certain keystroke, and Keyboard Maestro takes the clipboard before it, and binds it around with the HTML and pops it back into place. And I have variations on that where with Apple Insider, for example, where I write, there are lots of certain pages that need to be referred to. It knows the formats for them. So it goes off and looks them up to check that they're there, and then pops them in. And so I use an amazing amount of links with a couple of keystrokes and then just watch it work, which is really quite satisfying. Whereas square brackets doing it for you, that's far too easy.
I just like the app name, the fact that it's called Text Soap. And yes, one of the functions is scrub, which is an enlightening mode.
Because it's you, and you've obviously been doing this a long time. When I was at the BBC in the late 90s, and we all had to use Word on websites, it had all the formatting problems you know about, and I wrote a macro for myself called Thickify. The idea was to take smart quotes and make them dumb, so make them thicker, Thickify. And this actually spread. This is turned out to be the most successful thing I've ever written, because it went around the entirety of BBC worldwide for it. There were people in Worldwide who thought it was a part of Word. Yeah, it was very useful. And those days are long gone. But even now, if I want to create something plain text, I will type X thick and text expander changes it into plain text for me and things. Thickify lives on for me.
One great text expander was from our expert we had on our show the other week. We spoke to Jeff Germant that used to work for Text Expander, and he had this wonderful snippet where you could just type in bio and it would literally drop a description about himself and his photograph in each one, which that's a lifesaver.
I'd never thought of the photograph. I'm involved with the Royal Television Society, and one year I was a judge on some things. And, you know, they emailed all the judges, can you send in your bio? And because I have a text expander snippet, XBIO, without a picture, I'm changing that. There was the email, hit reply, XBIO, sent. And because I did it so quickly, I was the first in, they put me top of the list of judges, above people like Stephen Knight. So on the night in this amazing event, gala dinner, proper bow tie, all the stuff there, yeah, BBC people coming up to me saying, how are you? Ahead of Stephen Knight and all these other people. So it was kind of good and bad, actually. But the picture, I'm definitely adding that now. Thank you.
Yeah, that was a very clever one. I give credit to him for that, for sure. I was going to ask William, why Mac as a writer and not Windows or another platform?
Windows. Does that still exist? When I first went freelance, 30 years ago. I just come off the back of working on a PC magazine, so I had to have a PC for them. The Mac I bought for myself. I bought a really expensive printer, and I set aside an afternoon to connect it up to the PC and the Mac. And in the end, I never bothered with the PC because I plugged it into the Mac, and the Mac said, oh yeah, do you want to use this once or all the time? All the time, please. That was it. It just worked. And I looked at that, and the hours I'd had to spend on everything else of the pieces. I want to get on with the writing, is what it is. I can't bear having to learn things. And I was at a Writers Guild meeting where a guy opened up his Windows laptop to make a note just before we went in for it, made the note, closed it, went into this meeting. It was a particular meeting that usually lasted about 5 hours. Very intense, serious stuff, lots of finance things. He opened up his Windows laptop to say whatever he had to say, and it chose then to update Windows. Forget asking permission, it was doing it. And he couldn't do anything for 3 hours while it was doing this. Microsoft thinks it is more important than your work, and Apple seems to be more concerned about getting out of your way, I think. And so, yeah, I just enjoy writing on. I do have a relative who thinks I am a particular computer nut, because I've said to you, a typical day is anywhere between 10 to 14 hours in front of the screen. He thinks I'm obsessed with computers. And I have to stop to think, I suppose I am using a computer, but I'm writing books, I'm recording podcasts, I'm talking to people, I'm creating videos and things. And it just happens to be going through one machine. And he is a Windows user who complains about how expensive Macs are. But in the time I had my last Mac, he bought 6 Windows laptops. And it's like, yeah, I've got to go now. This was the way that conversation ends.
I think I get like yourself. I gave up being an unpaid Microsoft developer years ago. I got into all that sort of thing. DL files became my wet night. I used to hate them with a vengeance. And then finally I joined a company who were using Macs. And all of a sudden I made the mistake of telling the boss that I had a PC at home. Oh, right, fine. You're now our IT guy. So all of a sudden I had to learn how to, run a studio of 10 Macintoshes. And I'm thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do? And I couldn't believe I ran that place for nearly 20 years.
I had a really technical question for William, if he doesn't mind.
Okay, suddenly wary. Yes, far away.
Would you rather use an iPad or a sonic screwdriver? And I shall let you explain why.
I'll tell you what, I'll explain why and tell you something you might not know. Hopefully you don't know, or this is pointless. The reason I know is I've written Doctor Who radio dramas for Big Finish. The thing I think you might not know is how the sonic screwdriver actually works. Because as a writer for it, it has a very specific function, which is this. The sonic screwdriver can do anything if you need the Doctor to get out of this scene and into the next one. And if you need him to be stuck, then it can't do that thing. So it's an anti-boring device, the sonic screwdriver. Would I prefer it to an iPad? Well, at the moment, I have a 2015 12.9-inch iPad Pro, which I love. But as of the last couple of days, a third corner has failed. So I have to rotate it if I want to tap something in the top corner. And there's now one thing left that works on it. And in most positions, if I tap in the dock, an icon and two to the left will launch. So it's a slightly frustrating process now, but I'm hanging on. I'm even today I was pricing up the iPad Pro, a replacement, thinking there might be another one very soon, and I want an Apple Silicon Mac next, so I can't. But right back at you then. You've got to tell me the same: iPad or sonic screwdriver.
It'd have to be an iPad.
Good.
Reason being is I do quite a lot of illustration work, as I'm sure some of the others know, and I couldn't live without the Apple Pencil.
Well, actually, maybe we could help each other out, because I've got a 2015 12.9-inch iPad Pro I'm willing to sell you. it's much loved.
It comes with its own special turning mode, I've heard.
Because the interesting thing will be when you go into the Apple Store, William, to look at getting your new iPad Pro, and the genius or the guy who's selling it to you is going to watch you pick up this iPad and start doing it, and then turn it to go up to the new corner, or trying to press the app 2 away from the one you actually want. There'll be a slight critical look in his eye at you, thinking, I think this guy's been somewhere too long.
I'm now going to hand you over to Martin to explain the next part of our show.
We call it Do You Know? Section. And it can be anything. It can be a fun fact that you might know about something. Usually it's related to Apple, or a little trick or a little app or something that you find really useful and you hope that maybe other people out there don't know. My one tonight, I just wanted to talk about, does anyone use hot corners? It's a little known aspect of your setup in your app, where you can set the system so you move your mouse to one of the four corners on your screen and it will automatically carry out a function. So mine are set for top left goes straight to downloads, top right is instantly into preview. So it just saves you that little time, and you can easily say, if you go into system preferences and go into desktop and screen saver, at the bottom there you'll see a little one which says hot corners, that little button. Press that and it will then tell you, there's a little drop down menu, you can set each corner to do a particular item. And for me, I just find, because I use the mouse an awful lot, it's great to be able to switch very quickly to your most common used aspects of your daily use on the Mac. So that's my one. What have you got, Alistair? Anything?
Yeah, so my tip is one I use on a daily basis, which it sounds really simple, but until someone shows it to you, you forget how simple it is. So I need to often add up stuff on a regular basis. Did you know that if you go into Spotlight and you start typing, Spotlight can act as a calculator? So I do Command Space, and then I start typing the numbers. And for those of you who are not aware, the asterisk is times and division is the backslash. So if you're having to work out something or divide something, because I'm often having to convert from dollars to pounds and other things.
Tina, what was your suggestion?
I'm going to give you my favourite thing to ask Siri. And my favourite thing to ask Siri is, what is 0 divided by 0. So it gives you an excellent explanation of why 0 divided by 0 is not defined.
Can I also add in there, your one you said earlier on, Alistair, was great. If you need to know very quickly a dollar rate conversion, if you just type in open Spotlight and type pounds and then the number 100, it will automatically tell you what the current dollar rate is. And if you hit the little exclaim button on the right hand side, it will show you euros and a couple of others. So very quickly, if you want to know what, you know, £950 for your next iPhone 10 is going to be in pounds, it'll change it for you very quickly.
My favorite thing with that is, well, this is an add-on. Alfred does a similar thing, but you can type the word kill and it will, and then it will kill the app that's in the list.
Nobody tells you this, so you either know it and think, yeah, or you don't. But in any browser, if you hold down Command and tap L, you leap up to the URL and you highlight it. So to go to a new site, rather than take your hands off the key, find the mouse, trackpad, go up, click, and then delete things, Command L, start typing the new one, and you're off for it. Saves you about a picosecond, but it means you're not stopping thinking, where is the mouse, where's the cursor? It's just, oh, I need to go to this site, I'm there.
I don't suppose I'm a particular speed user. I'm always onto the mouse or moving around up onto, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about the taskbar on the MacBook Pro. I personally love the taskbar. I think it gives you so many different options rather than just a range of fixed keys. Craig, come on, you haven't given us your one yet.
My suggestion for Do You Know is, if everybody has their phone handy, is more of a security aspect. So I'm guessing that most of us have got a touch or face ID iPhone to hand. So if you lock your screen and turn it back on, so you're not physically looking at the screen, and then if you swipe down the command center to open while the phone is locked, did you know that you can actually customize that and turn it off? So you can actually go into the face ID section of settings, and if you scroll to the very bottom, there is an entire customizational panel of what you want displayed whilst your phone is locked.
I remember when Face ID first came out, and I was doing a lot of writing workshops with fairly young children. And for some reason, and who knows why, I left my phone on one side of the room, and suddenly an eight-year-old tapped me on the shoulder and put the phone in front of me so that my face unlocked it and then ran off. With it, you've got to give him points.
Sadly, we've run out of time for this week's show, and we're going to say goodbye to our panel. Thank you very much for our wonderful guests. Thank you for joining us this evening. We really appreciate your time.
It's a treat to speak to you. I was obviously right, wasn't I? 12 episodes in, nothing left to say. It's been so quiet.
The one thing I would ask is, for the listeners out there, is how can they find some more information about yourself or your YouTube channel, which I'm sure they'll be highly delighted to find out some more information.
Oh, thank you, Fasna. The YouTube channel is called 58 Keys. It's 58 Keys, no space. And actually, there is an Apple reason for that, which I'll keep as a mystery if you like. 58 Keys on YouTube, or W Gallagher on Twitter is probably the best way to find me.
Thank you. And we'll say good night to Alistair first. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. And it has been fun this week, and I enjoyed our conversation. It's been great.
Nice fun. And thank you very much to Martin.
Yes, thanks, guys. Interesting conversation. And my thing goes out to all our listeners. If you've got something that a did you know item, please send it in to me. I'd love to express it on the show and find out some more. There's some real gems out there and little nuggets, which are brilliant.
Perfect. Thank you. And thank you very much to Tina.
Good night, all. And whatever your views, I hope you get the call soon for your vaccine so that life can hopefully get back, be a little bit more normal.
Yeah.
And thank you all for listening once again. And we will see you next time.